This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News. The state legislative session in Albany is now behind us as lawmakers grappled with a second pandemic-focused year. Early fears of a multi-billion dollar budget gap were eventually eased by federal COVID relief, majority Democrats pressed new criminal justice reforms, and the status of embattled Governor Andrew Cuomo loomed large. Joining us now to talk about what got done and what didn't is Hudson Valley Democratic State Senator James Skoufis of the 39th District. He also chairs the Investigations and Government Operations Committee. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, as always. Thanks, Ian.
From your perspective, how did the session wind up, and how do you feel about it?
I feel good about this session. You know, I think that of the 9 years I've been in Albany, this session, we really, as a legislature, flexed our muscles more than I've ever seen or participated in. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of legislative prerogative, and I think we saw a lot of that this year, whether it be during budget season or off budget. This was really the year of the legislature.
One question people might have, keeping track of Albany, is why some of the initiatives that were heralded earlier on in this session, like the clean slate legislation, didn't get passed when Democrats have control of both chambers and the governorship.
Yeah, so I understand that bill in particular was one that a lot of people were looking towards, especially because, you know, it seemed towards the end of a session that it was coming together. The clean slate bill, you know, it just unraveled towards the end, and that does happen. It's a controversial bill. That said, there were some technical issues that seemed to have, you know, were working its way out, and then, you know, we sort of just ran out of time. I do think that at some point, the clean slate bill will be revisited, whether we return to session later this year or at the start of next year. But let's not lose sight of the fact that there were significant progressive wins this year during session, not to mention, not the least of which, rather, is we finally are on a track to fully fund the campaign for fiscal equity, fully fund our schools. That's been something that, you know, folks have been talking about since day one that I've been in Albany 9 years ago, and we're finally doing it. My district this year saw an enormous increase in state aid that they've long been waiting for. We passed recreational adult use marijuana. We saw tax increases on the very wealthiest New Yorkers that allow us to pay for many of these important items. We had a lot of progressive wins this year. And so I know it's easy to get hung up on the one or two items that don't get across the finish line if you're an advocate or if you're, a progressive lawmaker. But, you know, you pick one of the items that did get across the finish line. During the years of Republican control, if one of those items got done, it would have been an enormous legislative session. So now instead of nine items, we got eight items done. You know, that should not lend itself to disappointment.
You mentioned, you know, maybe it'll be this year, maybe at the next legislative session. But reading the leaders' statements about the end of this session, they definitely kept the door open to coming back for a special session. Do you expect to be back in Albany before 2022?
Well, look, the one item that's sort of hanging out there that I think there is a lot of interest in taking care of on the Senate side are the appointments to the MRTA, the marijuana board, effectively. And, you know, we did not pick those up before gaveling at a session last week. And so I do expect at some point we will likely at least have the conversation about whether to come back and advance those nominations. And, you know, once we're back, you know, then perhaps that opens the door to doing other stuff. But I do think that, that item in particular is still outstanding. Could it wait till January? Theoretically, it could, but I think that there's an appetite to get that board filled up.
How has life been as a lawmaker in Albany over the past 2 years with this mix of a closed Capitol, you know, the typical lobbying days aren't happening. Some of the votes have been done electronically, so I'm sure people's travel to and from the Capitol has been different than what we're used to. What's it been like from your perspective?
So So look, you know, certainly at the height of the pandemic, especially last year and, you know, coming out of the winter very early this year, it was necessary. I mean, there was no avoiding it. Vaccines had not obviously been rolled out until, you know, the very start of this year. And, you know, we needed to keep ourselves safe, needed to keep the public safe. And so it had to happen. I do think that there's a strong interest in getting back to normal. My full expectation, and, you know, the leader mentioned this in her floor remarks last week, is that we will be back to a normal sort of session environment come January of next year. And look, I think that's healthy, right? We want the Capitol back open. We want our constituents and you know, organizations and groups to be able to come and meet with us and talk about legislation. And that was just simply difficult this year. And so you know, I expect we'll be back to normal session next year, and it's, I think, it's a good thing. You know, the last 2 years, it's been difficult. You know, if you're doing your job right, you thrive on being able to meet with folks and educate yourself on issues that are coming up that they care about, that are important to your district. And, it was just more difficult this year.
I think there's a perception that Governor Cuomo was kind of cut out of a lot of the late session talks that we're accustomed to seeing. He's been doing a lot of COVID events on the road around New York State, but wasn't really seen in the Capitol. Is that true from what you saw?
I think there's no denying that he had diminished political capital starting in March of this year. Now, there's really no avoiding that fact. Was his office engaged during the budget and post budget? No doubt about it. I especially on COVID matters, but even on some legislative matters, you know, my office was in regular discussions with his legislative team about our legislative priorities. And so, you know, were they engaged? Yes, but typically you see the governor out there in March. And the budget is where he has accumulated the most power because, you know, as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, he can basically jam us come April 1st. Here's my budget. If you don't like it, shut down the government. I dare you. And he has that constitutional leverage. And so during budget time, he has enormous power. And quite frankly, you know, he was, you know, part of leadership level conversations, but at the end of the day, you know, he didn't really pull out the stick like he oftentimes does. Every year, you know, he sets these ultimatums. Well, I am not signing a budget if this is not in it. I am not signing a budget if this is in it. And we didn't really get those pronouncements this year. And, you know, it stands to reason, you know, he had these issues that he was dealing with.
Well, is that a better or worse way of running things, you know, based on the time you've been in Albany?
Well, look, I'm obviously biased. I'm in the legislative branch. I'm not in the executive branch. And so anytime that the legislature can claw back some of that prerogative and exert ourselves as a co-equal branch of government, I am very much in favor of that. I'm, you know, in many ways, an institutionalist when it comes to legislative prerogative. And I think we ought to be doing more of it, quite frankly. And so, you know, I thought the budget process this year was a refreshing one because we weren't sort of just pushed around or steamrolled. You know, the constitutional powers are very unequal during budget time. The governor has, far, far more constitutional power than the legislative branch during the budget. But this year, it was at a minimum a level playing field, if not tilted towards the legislature. And so I thought it was a very refreshing process.
I mentioned the committee that you chair, the Investigations and Government Operations Committee. That role has put you kind of into the soup in state government over the past 6 months or so, as Governor Cuomo has faced mounting criticism over his handling of the pandemic and other issues. What questions do you still have about Governor Cuomo's handling of COVID, nursing home death numbers, that sort of thing, as this session ends?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And look, you know, the Investigations Committee, I'm proud to say, has taken on a very different role than it has under prior chairmanships. during the old Senate Republican majority. The Senate Investigations Committee did not do investigations. They were not engaged in the questions of the day. And, you know, that all changed when we took the majority and I took the reins of the chairmanship of the committee. And so, you know, we did 40 plus hours of hearings on COVID impacts with a particular focus on hospitals and nursing homes. And we've done a lot of this investigative work that has compelled some answers. And so, you know, we do have some answers. You know, you asked what questions still remain. Fewer questions remain because of the work that we've been able to do in conjunction with the Attorney General and some others who have pressed. But make no mistake, you know, you've got a number of criminal investigations that are ongoing from the FBI, from the Department of Justice. And, you know, they are taking a very deep look from what I can gather in the reporting as to the, you know, sort of when did they know it and why did they do it? So, you know, they're looking at, for example, why were the numbers scrubbed from the initial drafts of those nursing home reports that the Department of Health issued? And so, and, you know, was there motivation? What was the motivation for it, if any? And so, you know, I think those types of questions still ask, if those speak to criminal aspects and elements. And that's not something, obviously, that, you know, a legislative committee handles. But, you know, certainly there are still some questions out there. And from the legislature's perspective, though, you know, we tried to gather as much information as we could to inform a legislative response. And if you look at what we did in the Senate and the Assembly followed suit, we put together a comprehensive nursing home reform package of bills that was informed by the investigative work that the committee did. And so, yes, there's always still more work to do on this particular issue. We are not going to interfere with the criminal investigations, but where we can find a space to do more work and uncover more answers, of course, we're certainly interested in that.
Governor Cuomo is being investigated by the Assembly Judiciary Committee and an impeachment inquiry. We don't know the timeline for that. We also don't know the timeline for the independent report by the Attorney General. Is your committee that you chair interested in the issue of sexual harassment specifically pertaining to Governor Cuomo or in general?
Of course. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding. Before any of this all happens, the Investigations Committee co-chaired with Senator Biagi and Senator Salazar a couple of years ago, really, you know, historic first in New York hearings on the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace. I remember one of those hearings going well beyond midnight. You know, we were listening to testimony for so long, and we've taken the lead on, again, you know, offering up a legislative response to that sort of investigative work. So yes, of course, we're interested in the outcome. I think every legislator is interested in the outcome the Attorney General's report, I suspect, will come out first. And then, you know, of course, we're interested in what the Assembly finds, because depending on what the Assembly does, then, you know, perhaps there's a formal role for the Senate to play in those types of proceedings. And so, yes, I think we're all very interested in the outcome of those efforts.
Do you think, I mean, we obviously will want to see what is in the reports. Everyone's waiting to read those. But do you think it's plausible that Governor Cuomo's on the ballot as the Democratic candidate for governor next year?
I think anything's plausible in politics. I think just about every Democrat in the state Senate has called on the governor to step down. And so, you know, I think I'm not speaking out of school when I say that, you know, our desire here, our hope is that we can turn the page come the elections next year. But, you know, plausible, anything's plausible. I've seen crazier things in politics. But, you know, I think the desire of the Senate majority, you know, we've made that pretty clear.
I want to go to one other area with you, Senator. 2022 is also the time for the redrawing of district lines. And as we come out of the last census, people probably know that New York will lose one House seat due to population shifts. Maybe they don't pay as much attention to the state lines for the State House. But this is an issue you've been paying special attention to. What would you like to see in terms of the next round of redistricting?
So look, you know, the next round of redistricting ought to offer up fair maps. It's as simple as that. You know, the only reason why the Senate Republicans were able to maintain a majority for all these years is because they gerrymandered the heck out of New York State. And, you know, you look at New York and the registration is so lopsided, to the Democratic side that, you know, it took some very creative, to put it kindly, district lines for the Senate Republicans to maintain power. And so, you know, honestly, I think the interest here is to just ungerrymander the current lines. And you do that, you have compact districts. You have, you know, districts that reflect, you know, a plus or minus very close to the median population in each district. You're not packing districts upstate like the Senate Republicans did and, you know, drawing very large districts population-wise in the city in order to diminish the number of seats down there. We just want fair lines. I think that's the interest, and just ungerrymander what's in place. And, you know, I'll just raise the point. You know, people, you mentioned maybe people don't pay as much attention to the state lines as the federal. I think people pay even less attention to the county lines. And those are drawn next year as well, the county legislature lines. And, you know, I just passed a bill I carry with Assemblywoman Paulin that would, for the first time, make sure that gerrymandering could not happen at that level. That bill is going to get sent to the governor. I expect him to sign it. And just in time for the county lines next year, we'll finally have fair lines in place. So, you know, this is going to be a big issue over the next year. There's no doubt about it.
Isn't it in the Democrats' interest to do what the Republicans used to do and make sure that they don't lose the majority in the state house that they worked so hard to get?
We don't have to. That's the beauty of it. We don't have to. You know, we just simply ungerrymander what the Republicans have done, and we will be just fine. You know, the Republicans won these races for so many years because they rigged the elections. We just make them fair. We make them neutral races. We don't need to gerrymander them. We don't have to do what they did in order to maintain the majority or the supermajority. I have full expectation that we'll have fair lines just by the simple virtue of undoing what the Republicans did.
You have a baby now. Are you getting any sleep?
You saved the best question perhaps for last. So in the last few days, we've been getting a little bit more sleep, but it has been trying. There's no doubt, especially, you know, towards the end of session. And, you know, anyone who follows state politics knows the two busiest times of year in the legislature are the couple weeks leading up to the enactment of the budget and the couple of weeks leading up to the end of session. And so, you know, the last few weeks have been a lot because, you know, I've certainly been eyeball deep in trying to get, you know, bills across the finish line before we gaveled out, while also still, doing my part at home. And so it's been a lot, but it's a special, last couple of months or so. There's nothing quite like it. And it's, you know, any diminishment of sleep is worth it. And that's why, you know, we have adrenaline to get us through it. So it's been fantastic.
Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from the 39th District, thank you so much for taking the time for us.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.